A nonprofit organization with a 501c3 status that is dedicated to supporting all DC villages and the district's aging population. Its mission is to enrich and enhance the lives of older adults and cultivate supportive, engaged communities among neighbors citywide, while positively shifting societal views on aging. And also joining us is Reverend Kathy Pointer, the founding director of Kingdom Care Senior Village in Ward 8. This unites friends, families, neighbors, and communities to support and assist senior adults. KCSV offers a range of services, including activities, home visits, and senior care buddy systems tailored individual support to meet each member's specific needs. She also serves as co-chair of DCVC. So today, technically the village are grassroots neighbor to neighbor networks that make aging fun and cool and really makes aging at home when it's not possible, but also purposeful, powered by volunteers that connect older adults with services and supports and friendships needed to remain independent, safe, and fully engaged within our communities. Dr. Polk, Reverend Pointer, the PMP sisters, thank you for joining us today. And so before we get into the organizations you represent and how they work, let's give the listeners a little bit of information about you.
Okay, so do you want to go first, Reverend Pointer, or would you like me?
I can go first. Thank you. My name is Kathy Pointer. I am the co-pastor of the Greater Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church, Full Gospel Baptist Church in Southeast Washington, D.C. And I serve as executive director, as has been said by Jaina, of the Kingdom Care Senior Village here in Ward 8. And just really connect a lot with community. We've been in the community for over 30 years. That's matter of fact, 38 years. And I'm actually here today because we were serving our community through a food pantry distribution we do every Tuesday. And through the Kingdom Care Senior Village, we serve seniors. We have a passion to just help seniors age in place. So I've just been doing community work, also work with the youth, with after-school programs. So I just really think that we support the youth on one end, seniors on the other, because both are very vulnerable populations, and we can just help them thrive and survive. So I'm just really passionate about doing work in our community. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Dr. Pointer, I don't even know if I can follow that. But as the host said, my name is Dr. Katrina Polk, affectionately known as Dr. Kat, and I'm a social scientist, and I have been in the field of gerontological health studies for over 30 years. But in a fun way, I just say I'm also known as a beer brewer, a book writer, Harley Davidson riding grandma from the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, who lives in Ward 8. But more specifically, as a scientist, my life work has been more about getting folks to see that aging is not an afterthought. It is the future of every community. And I believe that our society thrives when we design with not just for the people that are the 50 plus population. So I really look to how we reimagine what it means to age well by shaping systems, policies, spaces that support belonging, dignity, and a purpose at every age of life. So that's a little bit about me, and we'll learn more as we go.
All right. So ladies, thank you so much. Okay. So tell us how your background connects to your work, and then go ahead and go into your work and have a conversation around that.
Okay, well, I can start off. So currently, I can say the work that I have done and how I'm focused here in this present time is that I'm hyper-focused on translating bold ideas, innovation into reality, especially in the areas of equitable housing models, tech-enabled supports, cross-sector collaborations, and, you know, community aging frameworks that will prioritize inclusion over isolation. So the goal is not simply to extend life, but to enrich it by making longevity an asset over burden. And at the heart of this for me is amplifying those voices of unrepresented communities, particularly our communities of color and women, right? Because with that wisdom, we often find that they're left out of the decision making. So I strive to champion a future where aging is celebrated and an era of contribution, creativity, and influence. So if we get this right, we don't just change how people age, we change how we all live. So and that's the kind of work I found a home within villages. So that's a little bit of how my work translates into the village movement here in DC. So Kathy, how about you?
Yeah, well, being a pastor of a church, and we know that in the African-American community that churches are vital, a safe place, a place where people in general, families really get their information, a trusted source for information and a trusted voice. And so for me and for us, it was really looking at, and we heard about the senior village concept. We were already supporting seniors, but taking the village concept and really engaging in it in a way, again, that we can be a voice and a safe place for seniors in our community. So we are about 8 years old and here at the Kingdom Care Senior Village. And it's all about, again, connecting with seniors one-on-one, and helping them to age in place. And just the work we do as a whole when it comes to families and family support, it just carries over to seniors. So it was just a very organic move for us in terms of embracing the village model and really helping seniors to connect and see that a village is a safe place. And one of the models I've developed as of late because of an incident with a senior is that every senior needs a village. Every senior needs a voice, somebody to support them and help them as they age.
Yeah, so just to experience like the data points around villages, I want to say last year in 2024, we served almost 10,000 adults across the 13 villages. And with that, there's some activities around friendly visits where we actually had reached about 11,000 people there. We did some programming activities. We touched about 5,000 in that particular component. And we provide transportation, and we hit the number about 7,500 in terms of one-way rides. So when you look at villages, which I do not operate in a village, in a particular village, I'm part of DCVC, which is the collaboration of the 13 village in the common interest. I want to say 96% of village members said that they feel socially connected to their community. So I think that, you know, as your point, Pastor Pointer, it's about how we help these individuals age in place and how we do that with different types of innovation around the work that we do. So I think that, as you said, it's just critical to the work that we do, how we move forward. And I guess I could talk a little bit about DCVC. So for people that are unaware of DCVC, as I said earlier, it's part of the 13 villages. And we actually play a significant role in ensuring that we connect with the common interests of the work that we do. We look to expand villages across the city. We currently have 13 villages, but we have 3 churches that are in a incubator waiting to become a village in September of 2026. And those churches are Faith United, that's in Ward 5. We have 2 churches in Ward 7. One is Pennsylvania Avenue Baptist Church, where Kendrick Curry is the pastor. And we also have another startup village, which is in the northeast section of Ward 7, and it is called the Zion Baptist Church of Eastland Gardens. So we have some villages that are up and coming. And as Kathy, as you talked about, Reverend Pointer, we have the incubator project, but we also have the ambassador program that you actually focus on. And then we have a new element, and maybe we could talk about that a little bit, about our help desk project, which we're in collaboration with Capitol Hill Village and Judy Berman, and how that has been an intricate part of, like you said, ensuring that every senior has a village. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, yes, I'm happy to. At the onset of COVID, Dr. Kett just talked about the ambassadors program. The question became, just as everybody else was, how do we reach people of color? And as I said, being a pastor of a church, immediately that was my thought. The best way to reach seniors of color are through their churches. They're really engaged in their churches. The churches know who they are. I'm very concerned about seniors. So we developed a program called the ambassadors program. And we, at that point, we had, I think, 8 churches that across the city that participated in that. And we just identified a church and then a person in that church to serve as the ambassador. And the whole purpose is to reach out to seniors, make sure they have resources, make sure they have transportation. At that point, we're talking about making sure they have vaccines and getting to vaccine clinics and all that. So we do a lot of work just around making sure they have what they need. There are a lot of resources in D.C., and we're very appreciative of the Department of Aging and Community Living, all other organizations that help support seniors in our city. So there are lots of resources, but oftentimes they don't know where the resources are or how to access the resources. So we did a lot of work and still do of making sure seniors through the ambassador program, they know where resources are. We know where they are, making those calls, making those visits, making sure we get the things that they need. So we went from 8 churches then. We have 14 right now across the city, ambassadors who are, again, reaching into communities and not just their church. We want to make that very clear, but their communities, making sure that we reach out into communities. So we're always looking for partners to help with that work. So we're doing a great work. I think through the ambassadors program last year, we served about 9,200 seniors just through the ambassador part of DCBC. So we're very pleased about that work and we look to continue it. So a shout out to Director Sharon Hines and DACL for continuing to support and to fund the work that we do through Villages.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank so you. Definitely. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Y'all were just having a, this is great. I just wanted to remind our viewers that if they wanted to call in and talk to you, because we do have a lot of viewers. We have a lot of listeners throughout the community within Prince George's County, D.C., Montgomery County, all those things, but specifically in D.C. So I just want to remind our listeners to please call and talk to our guests right now at 202-588-0893. And yeah, let's get more into your work. Let's keep going. Let's talk about the history, the current spaces in the community, where y'all exist, how y'all operate. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So the Villages, as Reverend Pointer indicated, it's a service delivery model that's hyper local into the neighborhoods, but to DCVC and myself, it's an innovation. So it's various models. So because of the fact that not one particular approach will work, there need to be multiple ways that we connect with seniors. So I appreciate the ambassador program. As I said, the help desk program is us now going, and when I say us, I'm talking about Villages, having an opportunity to go into subsidized housing and almost like a vertical village and be able to provide village-like services, the similar services that people, individuals, will be able to connect with if they're in a regular village. So this innovation is also community led. It shows how, you know, this is a solution for the neighborhood where it can really be cultivated and customized. It also helps with early intervention because people will participate in activities. And then as their needs grow, then they are in the actual right place to be able to connect to the service that they need. Most of the Villages are flexible, low cost, and some no cost. And it really creates that safety net through relationships and not that bureaucratic process sometimes that we have with our public agencies. So I wanted to just make sure we brought up how that the Village model is really innovative and how we're doing things differently through DCVC and the current Villages. So, we would love to have some questions if anybody has called in.
No one has called in yet, but I think they're just really, really listening. And I really do appreciate that. I want to talk a little bit about, briefly, if you guys could, the conversation around just now society's views around aging. I feel like it's almost specific to times and locations, because in different areas, you know, Not in like westernized areas, aging is seen as something respectful and thoughtful and things of that nature. So I want to talk about like the views on aging and how you're in this area and time period and how your organizations work around those or with those or against those.
Well, I think I would like to just include, I think we didn't actually complete your the response to your question about our how DCVC was developed. And I think it's right in alignment with what you're talking about now, because there was a growing need. And I know Reverend Pointer was a part of that evolution. So if we could talk about that, then we can move forward into how that really connects to aging and being able to expand beyond just our particular villages, but come together around common interests and understand that it's aging is just not a public health issue, but the solutions are in actually expanding and knowing that it is a movement, right? So we have to be able to look at it from making aging a priority in a movement. So Reverend Pointer, if you could talk a little bit about DCVC's history.
Yes. And again, we just really think it's important, Ms. Dana, the question you raised just about really helping seniors to be reminded of their value. As you said, in certain cultures, they're celebrated. We don't see that as much of that here, but we try to restore that they have so much to give, so much to bring. And then through the village concept, we're able to do that. Through the village model, we're able to do that, just working with them. The whole issue when seniors, as they age, sometimes they get isolated and lonely. And one of the purposes of a village is to help combat that, to bring them together, to celebrate with other seniors, to again connect with organizations and continue to thrive even as they're aging. And that is so important to us. So we really value that through the village model. As Dr. Katz said, each village may be different, but our main goal is the same. That is to do our best to help them age with dignity, to help them age knowing that, hey, you can stay in that home a little bit longer because you have supports and you have systems to help you. And the village is certainly there to help our seniors know that they have someone to turn to, someone to go to, someone they can call. One of the things I think I would like to mention before I wrap this part up is that, you know, I've asked recently, what's the difference between a village and some of the other resources? We really see ourselves as a part of the overall system in the district of helping our seniors. We have wellness seniors, we have lead agencies, we have the AARP, we have Age Friendly DC, and then the villages are just a part of that. But I think one of the differences is that villages are more one-on-one. So that is that somebody can call us pretty much any time, and we're going to respond to make sure they get the support and service that they need. So we celebrate seniors, and we hope to bring that message alive to everyone else that we should celebrate our seniors. It's a great thing to become a senior, and if we all live long enough, we're going to become seniors.
Yeah, and just to add to that, like you said, around the culture, the centric pieces of it being very hyper local to the neighborhood, I think that's the element that other parts of the senior network lean on us for, right? Because we have those relationships in our neighborhoods, we know who the individuals that need the additional help from our partners, like the Department of Aging and Community Living. So that's why villages are they're very essential. But I think also the villages had a larger idea that they wanted to to be manifested by being able to deepen their relationship and expand across citywide projects, which is why DCVC was created. And the village leadership from each of the 13 villages decided that, hey, we want to do some things that we can't do alone. And we want to be able to bring our resources together and to ensure that will help ensure that seniors have a village, those that are not connected currently, and that to do work around equity. So our equity project really focuses on those people that are not attached to any system, right? So being the villages that have those relationships, we have more connectivity with them, and to help them right track their concerns to be able to go into particularly if we cannot complete the task, or we have to look for a resource, we can then connect them to our strategic alliance with the Department of Aging and Community Living. So just wanted to just sum that up a little bit as to how DCVC plays a part in the in this actual ecosystem that we call aging here in DC.
Thank you so much. I know we're kind of running, this has been a really good conversation. I know we're kind of running low on time, but I got like two more questions I wanted to make sure I eked out before we go. Can you explain how innovative models have allowed DCVC to expand its reach through collaborative efforts within the village?
Certainly. I know I can start off. So we have a mandate for DCVC, and it's a mandate that we created for ourselves that we want to touch more people. So by doing that, we understood that there need to be different types of solutions that are evidence-based. So we looked at, as we mentioned earlier, the ambassador program and using the robust faith-based community to be able to leverage to connect with seniors. We also have a model, as I spoke about earlier as well, where we're doing now with the partnership with Capitol Hill Village, we're expanding a help desk system where subsidized housing residents can be able to navigate services and be able to have a village as well. And the other particular piece where we get a lot of momentum and a lot of support is our incubator process, where we're looking at how do we expand villages across the city. So as I mentioned earlier, we have three in an incubator process. So that's the two in Ward 7 and the one in Ward 5. But we also have some informal groups that are coming together that want to start a village. You know, the people that start the village at the kitchen table at someone's home. So we understand that service delivery can't just be one model. It has to be a multiple prong approach. So we have taken the opportunity and have been supported by, like we said, like Reverend Pointer pointed out earlier, in terms of DACL and the director there. But we also have been, we found support with the Clark Winchell Foundation, the Washington Home Foundation, and the Morris Gwendolyn Kafrich Foundation. They have looked at our model, believe in our model, and has helped us really implement the things that we need to do to grow and thrive to ensure that every senior has a village. So I'll pass it on to you, Reverend Pointer, to see if you have anything to add.
I would just add, I know we're wrapping up, but I would just add that we do really, really appreciate the support of all 13 villages. And that's what's also, I think, been so phenomenal. When we sat at the table or on Zoom during that time and decided what can we do, you mentioned, Jane, a collaboration, we decided as a group that we wanted to help the village model to grow and to reach out into other communities. So we do want to shout out, too, to all of the village directors, all of the villages across the city for the support toward moving this in the direction that we're going in. Now, it's been a while coming, but we're very pleased with where we are, where we're going, and we're looking forward to the future.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to make sure, Dr. Polk, Reverend Pointer, thank you so much for joining us today. And as we transition to our next guest, do you have anything else to say to close us out in relation to your work and what you want the community to know?
I'll let you go first, Reverend Pointer.
I would just like to just say that the village model is growing. We think it's absolutely necessary. As I said earlier, I had an incident a couple of months ago that just made me realize that it's the value of every senior having a village for them to age in place, to have that level of comfort, some level of security, that somebody is there that they can reach out to. And for all seniors, I say oftentimes, you're not getting a handout. You've earned and you deserve the services that are available. Reach out, connect with the village, connect with others who can help you connect with the village. So I would just like to say that villages are available to everyone who would be interested, and we welcome every senior.
Yes, and I just would like to give a shout out to our new DCVC board, right? Because DCVC initially started as a program under Capitol Hill Village, who have given us great support and continues. But now we are our own 501c3, and we have, of course, Reverend Kathy Pointer, who is a actual board member. But we have several others. We have Bill Emmett. We have Ross Harmony. We have. Who else do we have, Kathy?
Dr. Morgan
Gopnik, and we have One Village, Georgetown, Lynn.
Yes.
So we have quite a few new board members, and we're looking for more. So we definitely would like to extend that out. If you think you have some qualifications and you want to be a part, you can either be a part of the board or potentially volunteer for us DCVC or one of the villages. And if you want to start a village, reach out to me, Dr. Kat, and I will start. We can start a conversation. I just think it's like Reverend Pointer said, it's imperative that every senior has access to a village and can age at home.
Thank you. Thank you so, so, so much. All right. Ladies, well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us today. We hope to have you back on the show to talk more about your work. And, you know, we're going to move into our next guest. Thank you so much, ladies.
Oh, I forgot to tell you one thing. Okay. I wrote a book, and I have to be able to come back. Invite me back so I could talk about my book, which is about how you turn 50 and how you age better. So,
Yes.
Okay.
I think we'll have you back in January for that conversation. Some New Year's resolutions. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. Okay. All right. And now we're on to our next guest. We had a wonderful conversation with the two ladies before us, and you know, wherever you live, it is important and imperative to be able to communicate effectively with your neighbors and your community. But sometimes having those conversations can be tricky. That's where, if you live in Prince George's County, Prince George's County Collaborative Resolution Center comes right on in. Here to discuss more about this is the director, Terry Blackwell. Terry, thank you so much and welcome to Community Watch and Comment. Before we start, I just want to remind listeners, you can call us at 202-588-0893 to have questions and talk to our current guest, Director Blackwell. Director Blackwell, first, let's let our listeners know about you and your connection to the county.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, for inviting me today. I really appreciate your commitment to the community and the work that you do to make sure that Prince George's County is, a county of excellence. And I just first want to thank you for that. When it comes to me, I'm from Washington, D.C., second generation Washingtonian, which I know is kind of rare. I've been in Prince George's County for 23 years I came to Prince George's County because I joined, at the time it was Full Gospel AME Zion Church, which is now From the Heart Church Ministries. And so I moved to the county because of my relationship with the church 23 years ago. I became a mediator, community mediator in 2019, and I became the director of Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center in January of 2024. So I love Prince George's County. I've grown to love Prince George's County and really want to make sure that it is the best county in across the state, if not across the country.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So tell us about PGCCRC. What is the history of the organization and what does it do within the county now?
So Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center, which is currently known or better known as PGCCRC, started out actually as a derivative of the Key Bridge Center, which was, I'm not sure of the exact date, that Key Bridge established itself in Prince George's County, but it was at least 10 years ago, if not 15 years ago, that it established itself in Prince George's County. And when the when COVID hit, Key Bridge pulled its mediation center out of the county. And as a result, Community Mediation Maryland, which is my parent organization, was determined to make sure that Prince George's County residents did not go without options for mediation. And they created Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center. And, you know, like many communities across the country, Prince George's County deals with violent crime. And with increasing numbers of crime happening within the youth population. And so, you know, lots of conflict erupt because people's expectations of one another are being violated or they're being unmet. And so it is very important to cut conflict and violence off at its root. And the best way to do that is to bring people together to have open, honest, transparent conversations in a safe place. And so that's exactly what Prince George's County, Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center does, is it creates a safe place for people to have hard conversations. And most importantly, we aim to do a lot of that work within the youth population so that we can dismantle the school to prison pipeline. And so we go into the school systems when there is conflict. We go into the school systems when students are dealing with truancy issues. We go into the school systems when when students and parents are facing IEP challenges, the school administration is facing IEP challenges. We go into the schools to ensure that students have every reason to be in school, that there is no excuse why a student can't be in the classroom when school is happening, as opposed to out on the streets or out in the community when, you know, they're not supposed to be there and there are not resources and activities for them to be engaging in that are productive. So Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center is here to get ahead of any conflict that might cause our county to increase in violence, for families to be torn apart, and for children to be hurt.
Wow, that is a lot. That is so good. My next question was kind of like, well, why is your work, you know, why is your organization, you know, important, and why is the work important? But I kind of feel like you touched on that. Can you talk about how, like, in real time your work comes through?
Sure. Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, we do is we work with, the Department of Human Services. We've done some really, really important, had some really, really important conversations with parents who are transitioning from foster care parents to actually full adoption, and helping parents to have biological parents to have planning conversations with the parents that are going to be adopting their children, so that they can talk about, you know, being incorporated into the child's life, so that a child who, even though they may be being adopted into a very loving and supporting home, never goes without knowing who they are, who they're connected to, and having that sense of rejection from, you know, at its core, you know. So we have very important conversations like that. We also work within the reentry community. So as returning citizens are coming back into our communities from incarceration, when they need to have conversations with their children who have been left behind and are hurting and are not necessarily looking forward to being involved in the life of the parent who has been incarcerated. And we know, all of us know, how that can impact not only what is happening, the relationship between the returning parent, but also it can impact the relationship that they have with the people that they have been living with. It can impact their friendships. It can impact their school life. It can impact what happens in their community. And so, you know, we help those returning citizens to reengage with the people that are going to be most important to them, validating their importance of staying within the community, so that when they face very difficult situations, stressful situations, situations that might normally cause them to make decisions that might return them into the prison system, they have a relationship that has become so important to them that the last choice that they will make is to do something that's going to hurt that person again. So, you know, our work is ultimately about building relationships. There's been plenty of research that has been shown that when people have strong, supportive relationships, they are more likely to make better decisions about their lives all around. And so we have gone into the schools most recently where there have been like group fights among, you know, students that were former friends. And so being able to bring those students together to give them, to show them what a collaborative conversation looks like and how after a conflict, there's a way to reconcile so that everybody is heard, everybody is understood, everybody gets the understanding of how you need to move forward, that they can see that happen early in their life. And many of them opt to repeat that, you know, in the future. They self-select to give mediation a try, and that translates into their making choices, different choices, even at home when they have conflicts. And so, you know, we do, you know, a lot of work to not just help people resolve conflict, but to help them see and feel what it looks like when conflicts have a peaceful resolution.
I think that's really, really important in context of teaching, not just teaching young adults a peaceful conflict resolution and also moving into what that looks like in adulthood. Can you talk about how you do that moving into adulthood? Like, what are some, I know you talked about having conversations with parents who are, you know, transitioning back with their children coming in their household or transitioning back into society. But what are some other things that directly impact adults that you, that your center, you know, does and focuses on? And again, you guys can call us at 202-588-0893.
And so one of the things that we do as well is that we have conflict management trainings, workshops at our center. So we go into businesses, we go into other nonprofit organizations, we go into the schools, and we also host them at our center, where we bring young adults, you know, adults in general, around the table, and we teach them the skills of conflict resolution. And those skills include learning to listen for what people value and how they feel about those values. We give them, help them develop the vocabulary to express their feelings around an issue so that they can communicate for themselves when they are I don't want to say necessarily say always in conflict, because the beauty of mediation is that you don't have to wait until you are in conflict. So, for instance, if you just want to have a conversation with someone that you've come, let's say you've returned home from finished college and it's time for you to move back in with your parents, you and your parents can sit down, and prior to the conflict, you know how to express what is important to you when it comes to how you how you live, you know, your autonomy, being able to come in and out of the house whenever you would like. You know what's important to you when it comes to, you know, let's say having friends over or socializing, or, you know, all the things that have become important to a young adult while they're at college, the autonomy that they're looking for, the trust that they're looking for, making decisions for themselves, the privacy that they may be looking for when it comes to selecting a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And, you know, just the boundaries that they're looking for with their adult parents. And then for the parents, they may want to talk about, like, what they want communication to look like and how they want, you know, they may want the young adult to at least let them know when they're going to be staying the night somewhere. And because, you know, the child's safety is important to them. And it's not about crossing boundaries, but it's about, you know, making sure that their children are okay. And, you know, also talking about, like, you know, what they expect when it comes to, like, cleanliness around the house. And, you know, even though that bedroom space might be, you know, their returning child's space, they still may feel like, you know, this is our house and you can keep it any way you want to, you know, Monday through Friday. But we expect that, you know, Saturday or Sunday that, you know, that room is clean, that it's not just a pigsty, you know, developing roles and responsibilities around the house. And all of those things, when the young adults learn how to, when they have the language to express how they feel, when they have the language to, and they have the skills to listen. So we teach them to listen for the values of the other person and to listen for how the other person feels around those values. And then once you can do that, then you can begin to work on solutions. So if I know that, you know, what my parents want from me is that that safety is important to them. And my parents know that what's important to me is that I have, boundaries. So safety is important to my parents. Boundaries is important to me. And then the two of us, now that I know that that's what my parents are saying, that they're not saying that they're trying to control my life, but they're saying that they're trying to make sure that I feel safe, then we can now have a better conversation about how I move in and out their house as a young adult, right? And so we teach young people, we teach returning citizens who may have been incarcerated for 25, 30 years and just simply haven't had to, they've been told what to do, you know, for the last 25 or 30 years. And now they have to make those decisions for themselves. And so that, you know, the person that they're living with, they don't want another child, right? Where they have to, you know, tell them what to do. You know, I need you to get up and out the house and be looking for a job. Or, you know, if I'm out the house from 9 to 5, I don't expect you to be in the house, you know, from 10 to 6. I expect you to be doing something. And the person that has been, you know, in a facility just may not know, you know, what all that actually needs to look like, where they're supposed to go. What is transportation supposed to look like if I'm out the house? Where am I supposed to get the money to be able to move around? How, you know, what are your expectations around, like, any of my contributions, food? How do I pay you back? Maybe the person that they're living with wants them to pay them back by helping them take care of, like, the children or doing things around the house. So just by teaching adults how to listen, how to giving them the vocabulary to express their feelings, giving them the vocabulary to express their values, teaching them how to listen for other people's feelings and values plays a huge role in making sure that even when we're not around, the community knows how to communicate with one another and get their solutions solved.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The work you're doing is amazing. That is a lot. And it's really great to hear that. I know that I've heard a lot about conversations around parenting plans and custody. And I want to know, like, do you guys deal with that as well?
Oh, yeah. So, yes. And so one of our biggest referral sources is the district court. And so I would say 80% of the mediations that we actually handle are parenting plan mediations. And, you know, those are for, you know, anyone, even if you already have a parenting plan in place and you are still struggling to get your expectations met around those parenting plans, or things have changed and an adjustment needs to be made, instead of going to court, you can come to Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center, and we can help you to tweak any plans that you've already made with the person that you're co-parenting with. Or if you want to establish a parenting plan for the first time without going to court, you can come to us. And we help parents make decisions all the time around education, healthcare, vacations, transportations, daycare, medical, you know, arrangements, insurance, you know, any decisions that are impacting the child or may impact the child. All of those decisions can be made in mediation, and you can alleviate the expense of going to court. And what I haven't said, and is what I think is definitely one of the beauties of our center, is that we make it accessible to our services, accessible to everyone. And that is because we deliver these services to Prince George's County residents at no cost. So whether you are, if you're a business operating in Prince George's County, we can help you if you have business to business disputes. If you have received service from a business in Prince George's County and you have an issue with that service, you can use us to mediate whatever the issue is. But whether you live here or work here or go to church here, any connection that you have, if you are connected to Prince George's County in any way, then you are entitled to our services at no cost.
That is amazing. That is amazing. We're wrapping up here, but I just got two more questions. How can people get involved with PGCCRC?
Well, we first of all, getting involved with PGCCRC is very simple. All you need to do is to reach out to the center. You can do that by going to our website, which is www.pgccrc.org, and where you can fill out, there's an application to volunteer with us. You can also call the center at 301-690-0116. That's 301-690-0116. Or you can email the center at printpgresolutioncenter@gmail.com. That's pgresolutioncenter@gmail.com. So you can reach out to us one of those three ways to let us know that you are interested in getting involved with the center. And you can be involved with us in multiple ways. You can be, and you can get, become a mediator, a community mediator, with the center. You can also, be someone who wants to join us at like outreach events or presentations. We have trained high school students this summer to be mediation ambassadors, and they receive community service hours, service learning hours whenever they work with the center. You can also become a member of our advisory council. So regardless, if you have knowledge and expertise around nonprofit management, if you just love the idea of reaching out to the community and making sure that everyone knows who we are, or, you know, if you want to actually serve as a mediator and get into, you know, be a part of, you know, running to the fire when it comes to conflict, then you can volunteer with PGCCRC.
Thank you so much. And then, you know, what is something that you are most proud of around the work that you are doing?
I think what I'm most proud of is the work that we're doing in the youth community. And so, like I said, this summer we launched our first annual inaugural mediation ambassador camp. And that was where we trained 20 high school students from the ages of 14 through 18, how to identify conflict. We taught them, first of all, you know, how they typically have been taught to respond to conflict, like what their natural inclination when it comes to conflict, how to identify conflict, how to identify when mediation is most appropriate for a conflict, and then how to refer people to mediation. And so they've gone back to, these 20 students represented 11 different high schools in Prince George's County. So they returned to their high schools as mediation ambassadors, referring their students, their peers, their administrators, and their family members to Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center as a means of reducing the opportunity for violent crime to happen in our community. So that is probably where I am most proud, that we are raising up a generation of young people who see coming to the table in a collaborative way as a means of making plans and resolving conflict. And I believe that if our young people can get that etched in their heart, then we can actually change the spirit and the heart of Prince George's County in general.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So as we close out this particular session, we have about 2 or 3 minutes. Can you tell us just some things that you want the community to know to end off this particular session?
Well, I think I want the community to know that we can be better, that better starts with, I believe, when people are living in a community where they feel safe, where they feel is peaceful, then I believe that community is the ideal community to live in. And although we can never reach complete peace, I believe that that is the goal for most people. And so, you know, I just want people to remember that they have a choice, that before you call the police, before you go to court, before you call an attorney, you have another option. Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center has some of the best mediators across the country. Prince George's County represents only one of two accrediting bodies. Prince George's Community Collaborative Resolution Center represents one of only two accrediting bodies for mediators across the state. We go to other parts of the country to train mediation centers. So although our services are at no cost, it doesn't mean that our quality of service has diminished at all. So you're getting some of the highest quality services at PGCCRC, and you're giving your community, your family, your schools, your businesses an opportunity to exist in a harmonious community. And I think that's what's most important.
All right. All right. Well, that is going to do it for us today. I want to say thank you to all of our guests recently, Ms. Terry Blackwell, Director of PGCCRC, Prince George's Collaborative Resolution Center, located within Prince George's County, Maryland, a resolution center to provide resolutions for the community as a whole. I also want to thank Dr. Kat Polk, as well as Reverend Kathy Pointer from DCVC, the DC Village Collaborative, and Kingdom Care Senior Village. And we want to just say thank you again for everyone joining us. That'll do it for today's show. Thanks to Mike Nacella for his engineering experience. As always, the best. Don't forget the blues with the amazing Lady Murph. And I'm Jana Parker. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly 5 decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings and happy holidays. The new year on WPFW will be celebrated in sonic bliss as some of your favorite programmers present the 2026 edition of New Year, New Jazz, our annual survey of the Jazz Year in Review 2025 on Thursday, January 1st from 5 a.m. until midnight. This day will present a delightful and potent mix of favorite 2025 jazz record releases, honoring jazz ancestors who passed in 2025, and music representative of our favorite 2025 DMV live jazz performances. That's Thursday, January 1st, 2026, New Year, New Jazz on WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Don't sleep.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and justice wherever you are.
I'm dreaming, dreaming of a white Christmas, you're just like the one that I used to know. Honey, it's where the treetop, 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 listen.